The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And the first article is called Testosterone Uses in Men and Women. This comes from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter of March 2021, and it's subtitled, Have Risks, But Sometimes Considered. You may think of testosterone as a distinctly male hormone, but it's present in both men and women, and there are reasons to consider medical uses of the hormone for both sexes. In men, testosterone plays a pivotal role in the external development of genital organs and secondary sexual characteristics, like a deep voice and facial hair. Testosterone affects other parts of the body, including bone density, blood pressure, and the creation of red blood cells. It's produced primarily in the testicles, and levels vary greatly among men. Women make testosterone in their ovaries and adrenal glands, but they make much less than men do. What is the proper use of testosterone in men? Testosterone replacement therapy is intended for men diagnosed with hypogonadism. This is a condition in which the body doesn't produce enough testosterone, sperm, or both, due to a problem with the testicles, primary hypogonadism, or with the pituitary gland or hypothalamus, and this is called secondary hypogonadism. Some people experience both primary and secondary hypogonadism. A congenital abnormality can cause hypogonadism, where it may occur due to issues like obesity, injury to the testicles, pituitary tumors, radiation treatment, or certain drugs like opioids, cannabis, in other words, marijuana, or chemotherapy. To be diagnosed with hypogonadism, you need to display both low testosterone levels and signs and symptoms suggestive of low testosterone. Low testosterone levels need to be confirmed by at least two blood tests taken on separate days, as testosterone levels can fluctuate. There isn't a standard low level, but Mayo Clinic experts consider 240 nanograms per deciliter the low limit of normal. What are the signs and symptoms of low testosterone? Well, they may include decreased sexual desire, decreased energy, depression, loss of muscle mass, reduced body hair growth, development of breast tissue, and loss of bone mass, which is called osteoporosis. If you're diagnosed with hypogonadism, further testing can help determine the underlying cause, which may be reversible without the need for testosterone replacement. For example, if opioid medication is the likely cause, this can be adjusted. But in some cases, testosterone therapy may be a consideration. There are many different ways to administer testosterone, including first, skin gels, solutions, or patches. With these, testosterone is absorbed through the skin. Secondly, injections. These can be given in the muscle or under the skin once a week, every few weeks, or a couple of months apart. Third, pellets. Testosterone-containing pellets are implanted under the skin and are replaced every few months. Fourth, an oral drug. The Food and Drug Administration recently approved the oral medication testosterone undecanoate, which is called Jatenzo. Finally, tablets. A buccal tablet sticks to your gum line, and testosterone is absorbed into your bloodstream. Risks. Those receiving testosterone therapy must have their testosterone tested regularly to ensure that levels are within an acceptable range, and they should also be carefully monitored for side effects. Testosterone therapy can cause acne, enlarged breasts, low sperm production, testicular shrinkage, worsening sleep apnea, and it can have effects on the prostate as well as causing excessive production of red blood cells. Erythrocytosis, which is excessive production of red blood cells, can make the blood too thick and possibly contribute to an increased risk of blood clots and stroke. Some evidence shows that testosterone therapy has a negative effect on heart health, but more research is needed. The FDA mandates that testosterone product labels alert consumers of a possible heightened cardiovascular risk. Proper use in women. Some women may develop a form of sexual dysfunction that includes a lack of desire. This is called hypoactive sexual desire disorder, HSDD. Women with HSDD experience a lower or totally absent desire to take part in sexual activity. These women may experience a decrease in or lack of sexual thoughts or fantasies, spontaneous desires, a decrease in or lack of response to erotic cues and stimulation, which is called responsive desire, and desire that fades after beginning sexual activity. For women to be diagnosed with HSDD, the symptoms must cause distress and be ongoing for at least several months. Research has shown that testosterone therapy may enhance sexual function, including increased sexual desire and arousal in postmenopausal women with HSDD. But keep in mind, there are many possible contributing factors to sexual dysfunction. These include vaginal dryness, medication side effects, emotional or racial relationship issues, and stress. Using a multidisciplinary approach is best to address any physical or mental health issues. Consult with a sex therapist before attempting to use testosterone therapy. Treatment is not based on measuring women's testosterone levels, as these are difficult to precisely measure, since a woman's testosterone level is extremely low. In addition, it's not clear what levels are considered normal throughout women's lives, and there's no threshold level that predicts the presence of sexual dysfunction. There is no FDA-approved testosterone product for women, but it's sometimes prescribed off-label and prepared as a topical product. Testosterone doses intended for men are 10 times too high for women. Therapy should be discontinued if you don't see an improvement after 6 months of use. And testosterone in women can cause a number of side effects, including acne, excess body hair, and genital enlargement, which is called clitoromegaly, as well as voice deepening. More research on the long-term effects of testosterone in women is needed, as unknown risks may exist. Next, there is a subheading that's entitled News and Our Views. Under this, it says, medical care is still important in a pandemic. Since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, declines have occurred in the United States in the use of some healthcare services, like vaccinations, cancer screenings, and emergency room visits. At times, Americans were unable to get certain types of medical care because healthcare facilities were limiting services, especially in the early months of the pandemic. Others skipped care because they didn't want to risk contracting the COVID-19 virus in the emergency room or in their doctor's office. A Center for Disease Control and Prevention report found that emergency room visits decreased about 20% for both heart attack and stroke in the early months of the pandemic. Another CDC report showed that as of June 2020, 12% of adults had avoided or delayed urgent or emergency care due to worries about the pandemics, and 32% of adults had avoided routine care. While caution in a pandemic is understandable, avoiding medical care can have serious consequences. Data from March and April 2020 in five states found a 96% increase in deaths due to diabetes and an 89% increase in deaths due to heart disease. Decreasing healthcare use is considered a contributing reason for these increases. Always seek emergency care or advice in the event of a medical emergency. Stay on top of your vaccinations. It's vitally important to keep up with your care to manage chronic conditions like diabetes. For other medical services, contact your primary care provider for guidance as to whether an appointment is necessary or can be deferred, or find out if telehealth is an option. The next article under News and Our Views is entitled, Sexual Activity After Heart Attack is Linked to Longer Life. Resuming sexual activity in the weeks and months after you have a heart attack may seem risky, but new research suggests that it's not only safe for many heart attack survivors, but may also be associated with a longer life. The study, published in the September 2020 European Journal of Preventive Cardiology, followed 495 people in Israel who had a first heart attack in 1993 and had been sexually active prior to the heart attack. Most were male, and the average age was 53 years. Over the 22 years of the study, those who reported a return to their pre-heart attack sexual activity levels in 6 months of their first heart attack had a 35% reduced risk of death compared with those who cut back on sexual activity or stopped altogether. It's not clear that sexual activity was the cause of the increased longevity. Perhaps those who returned to sex were simply healthier and more emotionally connected than those who didn't. But Mayo Clinic experts say the study reinforces that for people with cardiovascular disease, sexual activity can be an enjoyable part of life that can contribute to an overall plan for improved heart health. Knowing if and when you can safely return to sexual activity after a heart attack is a conversation to have with your doctor. It's common to wait at least 1 to 4 weeks before resuming, or 6 to 8 weeks if you had open chest bypass surgery. An exercise stress test may be needed to evaluate how your heart performs during moderate activity. You shouldn't experience signs and symptoms like chest pain, excessive breathlessness, abnormal heart rhythms, or decreased blood pressure, which can indicate additional problems with your heart. The next article in the Mayo Clinic Health Letter is entitled, Aging in Place, Make Your Home a Healthy Haven. Like most people, you probably would prefer to stay in your home as you age rather than move into assisted living or a nursing home. A 2018 survey by AARP found that 80% of people over the age of 50 want to age where they live rather than move. But the U.S. Census Bureau figures show that while most retirees do age in place, only about 10% of their homes meet minimum requirements for elderly living, which include a step-free entryway, a bedroom and full bathroom on the first floor, and at least one bathroom with an accessibility feature, like a shower chair or a grab bar. Fortunately, there's a growing array of options for maintaining independence. Whole industries have evolved to give older adults additional choices in their housing while supporting their desire to maintain independence. Builders are moving more toward universal design, home layouts that meet the safety and comfort needs of people in all stages of life, taking into account declines in mobility, dexterity, and even cognitive function that can come with age. The article then goes ahead and describes some of these. The first are changes to the entryway to the house. There should be ramps, not stairs. To prevent falls, you should be able to get from the driveway to the front door without stairs and on smooth surfaces that are free of cracks. Any slopes should have handrails to grasp. There should be keyless entry. A digital lock reduces the need to remember or fumble with keys. There should be wide doorways to allow clear passage, including for those in wheelchairs. Entry points should be 32 inches wide. There should be ample light. Overhead motion-activated lights improve safety and security at night. And there should be solid footing. Area rugs or doormats should be heavy enough not to shift easily and be attached to the floor or porch with strong adhesives. Throw rugs should be avoided. What kind of changes should be made in the kitchen for those who are aging in place? Well, first of all, as far as appliances are concerned, these should have automatic shutoff, which reduces fire risk. Also, appliance displays should be easy to read with push-button or voice-operated controls. There should be easy-to-use handles and levers. Aim for handles, not knobs, on cupboard doors, and a lever-style faucet for temperature control, rather than separate knobs to turn. The sink should have clearance underneath because this style is easier to use for people with wheelchairs. There should be wall ovens. They're easier to access and don't require working in close proximity to the stovetop, which is a burn risk. The article goes on to say, staying in your home is a personal decision that you should discuss in depth with your loved ones, your healthcare team, and an occupational or physical therapist who can assess your home's long-term livability as you and those around you age. In the graphics on these pages, see common modifications that improve your ability to age in place safely and comfortably. Next, they turn their attention to the bathroom. What should be done to the bathroom so you can age in place? First, there should be grab bars installed in the bath area and near the toilet for extra support. There should be a shower chair, which helps prevent falling in the shower. There should be step-free bath access. This is easier to access with limited mobility and reduces the fall risk. There should be an accessible toilet. It should be 17 to 19 inches high, compared with the standard 15 inches, which reduces the need to bend down as far. Consider a bidet, which can be installed with the toilet seat. This makes it easier to clean after voiding. There should be a handheld shower head. This is easier to adjust for people of all sizes and abilities. There should be solid footing in the bathroom. Try to avoid loose rugs or secure them to the floor with strong adhesive. Use non-skid strips on the shower floor to prevent slipping. And there should be a nightlight. This or other lighting helps avoid problems when you get up at night to go to the bathroom. What changes should be made in the bedroom? Well, in the main bedroom on the first floor, you should install a main bedroom on the first floor because stairs are a fall risk and will slow your exit in case of a fire. There should be no loose cords in the bedroom. Tuck cords away or use a floor cord cover to prevent tripping. There should be accessible light controls. Light switches should be by the door and next to the bed. A motion-activated nightlight helps ensure visibility when you get up at night. And all the tall furniture should be secured. Dressers and bookshelves taller than waist-high shouldn't be near the bed and should be fastened to the wall to prevent tipping, especially in earthquake zones. Next, Mayo Clinic health letter has a section called Second Opinion. Question: my pickleball partner has been injured reserved for a week with groin pain. Ice, rest, and stretching haven't helped. Could it be something more serious than just a strain? Answer: in older adults, pain around the lower abdomen, pelvis, and hips is common, especially when playing sports requiring cutting, pivoting, or changing directions. An inguinal hernia, a small tear in the abdominal muscle wall, can be a frequent cause of lower abdominal pain. However, musculoskeletal pain in the groin is common too. Groin strains and hernias have different causes and require different treatment. They do share some symptoms, including a dull ache or sharp pain in the groin area that's felt especially when coughing, going from sitting to standing, or twisting the torso. But there are some notable differences. A groin strain can often be felt as a sudden jolt of pain while making a quick lateral movement, whereas hernia pain more commonly develops over time. Pain from a hernia tends to increase when going to the bathroom, unlike a groin strain. A hernia can usually be felt as a small bulge in the upper inner thigh. Groin strains don't cause a bulge, although they may be tender to the touch. Excuse me. Due to inflammation of the muscles. You should be evaluated if you experience groin pain that persists for more than a few days. If your doctor diagnoses a groin strain, your treatment regimen will likely involve rest, ice, and non-prescription pain relievers, and exercises that stretch and strengthen the muscles of the region. Unfortunately, a groin strain can take several weeks to heal completely. If you have a hernia, surgery may be the best treatment, and can be done with open surgery or by a minimally invasive technique. But see your doctor, because they may advise a wait-and-see approach, and some people with inguinal hernias never require surgery. A course of physical therapy may be helpful for both conditions to aid in the healing process and balance tensions in the abdominal and hip muscles. Finally, there's a question. I have osteoarthritis in my knees, and I'm curious about supplements like glucosamine and chondroitin. Are these safe and effective for osteoarthritis? Along with standard treatments for osteoarthritis, including low-impact exercise, loss of excessive weight, physical therapy, cortisone injections and non-prescription pain medication, a number of supplements are available, including glucosamine, chondroitin, MSM, which is methyl sulfonyl methane, and SAMe, which is S-adenosyl-L-methionine. When you have osteoarthritis, the cartilage that covers the ends of your bones to help joints move smoothly wears down. Glucosamine is a natural compound found in your cartilage. There are several forms of supplemental glucosamine, but the most encouraging evidence is for glucosamine sulfate. Even so, this evidence is mixed, but glucosamine might provide some pain relief for knee osteoarthritis. Some studies have shown it may relieve osteoarthritis pain as well as do some non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. The supplement SAMe also may be helpful. There's research that shows that SAMe relieves osteoarthritis symptoms as well as NSAIDs. There isn't much research to support the use of either MSM or chondroitin. Some studies of MSM have shown slight improvement, but these studies were small and looked only at brief periods. Chondroitin may provide moderate pain relief from osteoarthritis, but study results conflict. Some research suggests that taking chondroitin and glucosamine together works better than taking either alone. All of these supplements come with the potential for side effects like gastrointestinal discomfort, and some may interact with drugs like antidepressants, blood pressure medications, and blood thinners. These supplements may take weeks to months to provide noticeable pain relief. They appear to be safe, but little is known about the long-term safety of MSM. Always talk with your doctor before beginning any kind of supplement use. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I sure hope you enjoyed it.